This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted.
This is Cat Meow.
And this is Becky.
And we want to hang out with you.
The Development Committee will meet the third Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m.
We're traffic informed and
food motivated.
And we're seeking like-minded individuals who want to use their rad fundraising skills and talents to
support the station. Join us.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a development director. This 32-hour-a-week position develops and implements the yearly fundraising plan, develops promotional and press materials, and supports the anti-oppression work of KBOO. Send a cover letter and resume to Delphine Crescenzo at del@kboo.org or send to KBOO Development Hire, 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please answer in the cover letter the question, why is KBOO important? Deadline to apply is Sunday, November 25th at midnight. More information on the development director position is available at kboo.fm/developmenthire2018.
It is a little past five, and coming up next, we have KBOO Evening News. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from True West, presenting Polyrhythmics, November 16th at the Aladdin Theater. Also featuring Kelly Finnegan and the Atonements. Tickets and more information available at aladdin-theater.com. In a few moments, we'll be having KBOO Evening News, but until then, we'll just be playing some music. Thank you.
It really didn't make sense just to leave this involved face to face.
Now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, wildfire smoke comes to town.
E-scooters are finished.
And in international news, Palestinian prisoner is released.
Good evening, this is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 14th, 2018. I'm Carly Meisberger.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. The four-month e-scooters pilot program ends next week, which means all 2,000 electronic scooters will be swept off the streets on Tuesday, November 20th. Lots of people in Portland absolutely hate the e-scooters, and some people love them. Many people have gotten injured and have even died riding them. They are still a very new idea and very controversial. There will be no more scooters laying all around Portland or people running into you on them for now. If you enjoy the scooters, they could make a comeback at some point because the scooters actually have been very popular. From late July to last week, there were over 640,000 trips and over 745,000 miles racked up. The three companies, Skip, Bird, and Lime, were all under the pilot program. The companies were asked to place 50% of their fleet in East Portland, but Skip wasn't following that rule and was fined $9,000. All the scooters will be taken away after November 20th.
The wildfires in California are so dense at times, the skies there are black. Now the smoke is moving into Oregon and Washington and could affect the air quality in the Pacific Northwest. Tuesday morning, air quality in Eugene was already measured at unhealthy. AirNow.gov is a site where you can go to check for the air quality and how healthy it is.
Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler's proposal to give himself new powers to restrict protests failed 2-3 on Wednesday when Commissioner Nick Fish cast the deciding vote against it. Wheeler states, quote, "After careful consideration, I cannot support this ordinance." Fish said, calling his decision and, quote, "a close call," based on his view that better alternatives may exist. Commissioner Amanda Fritz and Chloe Daly joined Fish in voting no. Wheeler and Commissioner Dan Saltzman voted yes. This ordinance would have given Wheeler power to issue orders dictating the conditions of protests if the group or groups planning to demonstrate had a history of violence and, in his judgment, would jeopardize public safety. Fritz decried the violent protests, declaring that white supremacists are not welcome in Portland, and the city council should make that clear in every decision we make. He also said Wheeler's proposal would not have made much of a difference to police. One advocate against the mayor's ordinance stated their thoughts during the meeting.
I want to thank the police chief, her command staff, and the city attorney for answering my questions last week. My office received the written responses to these questions yesterday. We have submitted them to the council clerk, so they will become a part of the record, and we will post them on our website and push the link out through social media so the public can read them as well. For members of the public who were surprised by my line of questioning last week or expressed, I guess, gratitude that I was finally addressing this issue, I want to explain that this was an extremely rare opportunity for us, a public dialogue with the police bureau and the city attorney, that this is actually nothing new for me. I just haven't had a chance to really speak about it publicly. As I mentioned previously, these questions were generated by myself, my office staff, constituents, and advocacy organizations. I asked them with multiple intentions. First and foremost, because these are questions that Portland activists have been waiting years and sometimes decades to hear the answer to. Secondly, to illustrate the many concerns I have with this ordinance. And finally, to give the police bureau an opportunity to clarify possible points of misunderstanding with the public. I also want to go on record as saying that I believe the mayor and the police chief have good intentions with this ordinance. Even if they can't be as explicit as I can, I know that they want to stop right-wing extremists from disrupting our city and threatening our residents as much as I do. And I also know that many of our officers are committed to this objective as well.
Now it's time for the KBOO News top headlines for Wednesday, November 14th. The California wildfires continue to burn at an unprecedented rate, with the latest death toll reaching 50. Meanwhile, 103 people, mostly senior citizens, are still missing. The Santa Ana winds from the east have continued to gust at 30 to 40 miles an hour, making it extremely difficult to fight the campfire near Chico, California. More than 6,400 homes have been destroyed. In Southern California, the Woolsey Fire near Malibu is now 47% contained, but two new fires have sparked up in the last 2 days, the Hill Fire and the Sierra Fire. The Hill Fire is mostly contained now, but the Sierra Fire, which started last night near Fontana, east of Los Angeles, has rapidly spread to hundreds of acres. In local news, a new report has found that Oregon suffered 146 hate crimes last year, up from 106 in 2016. This is part of a national report released each year by the FBI about bias-motivated incidents across the United States. Nationally, there were over 15,000 reported biases incidents last year. Analyses by reporters from the Oregonian found that one city accounted for nearly half of Oregon's reported cases, Eugene, at 72 incidents. In a previous Oregonian expose of white nationalists in Eugene, the paper reported that Antifa activists claim that Lane County-based white nationalists Jim Maher and Jacob Lasky have hundreds of followers and supporters nationwide. The men, they said, serve as public icons of the white nationalist movement, and their unchallenged existence inspires others. In Tigard this morning, a homeowner shot and killed a man who allegedly trespassed on his property. Tigard police responded to the shooting just before 8 a.m. this morning at the Summer Creek townhouses near Barrows and Shoals Ferry Road. The incident is under investigation, and police haven't released more information. In October, a leaked memo revealed the Trump administration is crafting a narrow definition of gender under Title IX that would be determined by gender at birth. This move could leave the 1.4 million Americans who are transgender without key federal civil rights protections. But the U.S. State Department has released a statement saying it has no plans to change the process used by transgender people to change the marker on their passports. In practice, however, even before the leaked Trump memo, a number of trans women have shared stories of having their gender marker and their medical documents questioned during the passport renew process. Their stories indicate that there has been some change in practice in passport renewal for the transgender people under the Trump administration, despite the State Department's denial.
In Washington, D.C., youth climate activists with the Sunrise Movement and Justice Democrats were arrested on Capitol Hill Tuesday for staging a sit-in at the Washington, D.C. office of Representative Nancy Pelosi from California, who is expected to serve as the next Speaker of the House, to demand that the congressional Democrats back a, quote, Green New Deal. The climate activists, who were joined by Congressmember-elect Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, said that Nancy Pelosi is bringing a squirt gun to a wildfire and called on her to step up or step aside. And the advocacy group Public Citizen has called on the House Judiciary Committee to investigate the conduct of Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker in his capacity as an advisory board member for World Patent Marketing, or WPM. In May, the Federal Trade Commission concluded that WPM lured hundreds of inventors to pay a total of $26 million for product development and promotion services that it never delivered. According to the letter, the FTC's findings raise numerous questions about misconduct, including materially false statements and intimidation of scam victims. The FTC's findings also raise questions as to whether Whitaker lied or omitted information from federal background checks to obtain his security clearance. That's it for the KBOO News top headlines. KBOO is in the Willamette Week Give Guide. Help us reach our goal and get yourself some great prizes. Go to kboo.fm/give to find out more. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for more great in-depth reporting. At 6, it's an hour segment of Right to Survive Radio. Then at 7, it's Combined Culture. Tonight's weather is 48 degrees with no precipitation? Maybe. Today in history, 80 years ago today, Crystal Byrd Fawcett became the first African-American woman elected to state legislature in America. As a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, Fawcett, a Boston native, spent much of her political and adult life in Philadelphia. The quote of the day is from Maya Angelou, who said, quote, "I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel."
California wildfires are causing a lack of peace of mind among residents. Many residents are frustrated by the lack of government assistance following the wildfires. Residents have resulted into creating their own living grounds, which have been categorized by the state of California as refugee camps. These camps are to be temporary for residents of Paradise County to seek basic necessities and a place to live. This region has also suffered a severe shortage of homes and apartments, and because of this, the aftermath of the fires may usher a massive housing shortage, potentially leaving thousands of fire victims homeless for months or even years. This information comes from county officials who warn that the process to rebuild the region could take years. 13 months ago, fires in Sonoma County destroyed about 5,300 homes, including about 2,000 in unincorporated Santa Rosa. Since then, the county's Permit and Resource Management Department produces 598 permits to rebuild homes, but another year later, only around 30 homes have been built in the unincorporated areas.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Leaders of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe and allies are marching to the U.S. Capitol to rally for land rights. The Massachusetts tribe is urging lawmakers to pass legislation for its reservation. The Interior Department in September issued a decision that it cannot hold land into trust for the tribe, reversing a 2015 designation. The bill reaffirms the status of the land. The event on Capitol grounds will conclude after speeches Wednesday afternoon. A judge in Washington state is expected to hear a case this week involving the Kalutz tribe and surveillance video. The tribe recently sued the Clark County Sheriff's Office to block the release of the video to a man who claims he was attacked at the tribe's casino. The tribe gave the video to the sheriff's office to investigate the incident. Attorneys are seeking the video. The Columbian reports tribal officials say the tribe is not subject to public records law, adding the video would compromise security and workers at the casino. The Santa Fe New Mexican reports congressional candidate Yvette Harrell has filed a lawsuit seeking to impound thousands of absentee ballots for her campaign to review. Harrell is not conceding in New Mexico's 2nd congressional district. Her campaign claimed victory on Election Day after taking a lead from Democratic opponent Xochitl Torres-Small. But after the counting of absentee ballots, Torres-Small had won by a few thousand votes. Harrell is reportedly a member of the Cherokee Nation, but her campaign has told reporters she's not made being Native American a focus because she doesn't want her political campaign to be about her heritage. A new production by a Lakota playwright takes on Thanksgiving and tells a story about relations between Native and non-Native Americans. It's a serious subject, but as Isaac Kestenbaum reports, the play is a comedy.
Larissa Fasthorse's new play, The Thanksgiving Play, is about four teaching artists who try to write a pageant about Thanksgiving.
I combed through all my research from grad school and came up with some ideas. Did my homework.
Let's start with your research then. A good drama is, at its core, truth.
The group's earnest, clumsy, and often self-satisfied efforts at cultural sensitivity.
Another option is to focus on the fact that this is a November play.
Right. For Thanksgiving?
For Native American Heritage Month.
Have, throughout the play, results that are disastrous, but also funny. Here's Fasthorse.
I mean, there's a lot of jokes that Native folks recognize about, you know, being considered wise. There's a character that they think must be Native American because she's so wise.
I have always been drawn to your ways.
Fasthorse describes the play, which opened at the Off-Broadway Playwrights Horizons in New York City, as a satire wrapped in a comedy.
The comedy, I would say, is the sugar to make the medicine go down. So the satire is the medicine, right? If I can make a joke, it disarms you, lets you relax a little, and then we can hit a little satire, and then a joke comes again, and we can all laugh about it, laugh at ourselves, laugh at each other. It kind of lets us all keep learning together as opposed to shutting down.
The Thanksgiving play is scheduled to run through the week of its namesake holiday. Fasthorse hopes that some audience members who see her play might approach their Thanksgiving gatherings a little differently this year.
If everyone, you know, as they sat down to Thanksgiving meals, wherever they are, would do some research and acknowledge the people on whose land they are sitting on and still profiting from, and learn a little about those people and the history and how they got here or were displaced from here and where they are today, that would be ideal to me. It's a start, right? It's more, it doesn't sound like much, but it's more than most of America is doing right now.
For National Native News, I'm Isaac Kestenbaum.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now it's time for Sojourner Truth. Thank you.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Tensions between Israel and Palestinians again on the rise following a botched Israeli commando raid in Gaza. Our guest is Ali Abunima, Director of Electronic Intifada. And tensions are also on the rise here in the United States on many fronts. But today we're going to be talking about the Georgia governor's race as the Democratic candidate Stacey Abrams, who has still hoping to become the first black woman to be governor of that southern state. Her challenge to her GOP opponent continues. She is not conceding. Our guest is Tiffany Smith. It is our Campaigners for Black Lives segment, and she is based in Atlanta, Georgia. We also remember Pacifica Radio very own Antonio Gonzalez, who has passed away. Antonio, much beloved here, and also in all of the states that he was active. He was the president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project and the William C. Velasquez Institute. He died on Sunday, and we are going to be speaking with Miguel Tinker Salas as we remember and honor Antonio. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
I'm Max Pringle with these headlines. The death toll in the wildfires raging across California has been updated to 50. Over 1,000 evacuees are at more than a half dozen shelters statewide. In Butte County, there were large bulletin boards with information about missing people. Authorities said Tuesday that the Camp Fire destroyed 7,700 homes. Butte County Sheriff Corey Honea said a list of the missing would be released soon and that 100 National Guard troops would help teams already looking for remains. Honea told reporters that the possibility remains that residents can encounter human remains even after an area has been searched.
It's possible that human remains could be found. I want you to understand, we're going to do everything we possibly can to diligently search for those remains, but this is a very difficult task.
People who lost homes in the Northern California blaze sued Pacific Gas and Electric Tuesday, accusing the utility of negligence and blaming it for the fire. Utility officials said it's too soon to tell what caused the blaze. Meanwhile, people are returning to some neighborhoods evacuated during the devastating Southern California wildfire, but officials say the threat is far from over. Forecasters say relentless winds that have fanned the flames could begin to diminish today. The week-long fire in Ventura and Los Angeles counties has burned an area roughly the size of Denver and is only about 40% contained. As the new Congress takes shape, House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California is running to take over next year's shrunken GOP caucus in closed-door relay 321. As the new Congress takes shape, House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California is running to take over next year's shrunken GOP caucus and closed-door elections that will set the tone for the new Congress. The race for minority leader is McCarthy's to lose today, but the Trump ally must fend off a challenge from conservative Jim Jordan of Ohio. Jordan is a leader of the conservative House Freedom Caucus. Voting for the biggest race is later this month. That's Nancy Pelosi's bid to return as House Speaker. California Representative Eric Swalwell told CNN he backs Pelosi because of her experience.
The longtime Palestinian hunger striker Qadir Adnan has been released from prison after a 58-day hunger strike. This included several days of refusing water as well as food. This was Adnan's third such hunger strike in 2011. He engaged in a 66-day-long hunger strike. And in 2014, he again undertook a hunger strike to the death of 55 days. He became a symbol of Palestinian hunger striking prisoners and their steadfast resistance to the horrific conditions and brutality of Israeli detention facilities. Adnan has been repeatedly imprisoned by Israeli authorities, who accuse him of being a member of a banned organization, Islamic Jihad. But he has never been accused of engaging in any violent action or taking part in armed resistance, simply of being considered a, quote, security risk. This has landed him in prison for months and even years at a time without specified charges. He has spent a total of 8 years in Israeli prisons. This most recent imprisonment lasted 11 months with no charges filed against him. He is one of hundreds of Palestinian prisoners held without charges under so-called administrative detention, in which Israeli authorities imprison Palestinians indefinitely with no charges or access to a legal system of trials and appeals. Since the beginning of the strike, Adnan was subjected to abusive measures.